postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to Birthful Mighty Parent or Parent-to-Be. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we're going to be doing birth stories as part of our Birth Beyond the Clinical Experience series. So my guest today is Haley McCone, whose first birth was what her OB called a textbook hospital delivery, which came with an epidural Pitocin combo and, frankly, little consent. So during her second pregnancy, Haley got more intentional about her wishes and her choices, and that led her to switch to the care of midwives at a birth center. Now, one of the things that really stood out to me from Haley's second birth is how closely her experience matches WAPIO's holistic stages of birth, especially since Haley had never heard those episodes. And so, for example, she had no reference point for the quietude or rest and be thankful phase that can happen between transition and active pushing. In fact, at that point, Haley even thought that something was wrong with her labor because she felt like it had stalled. Also, see if you notice how when Haley talks about her story when she was deep in labor land, so while she was pushing and her baby was born, how at that point she doesn't quite remember those moments or even has a hard time finding words to describe it. And again, that makes total sense to me when you consider that she was in such deep physiological, non-thinking brain states. Oh, and then at one point, Haley suddenly stands up, not really knowing why she did that. And then also, after her baby is born, during that first hour after birth, there really wasn't an urgency to get her placenta out. So there are just so many similarities between Haley's story and Wapio's holistic stages that you may even want to go back and re-listen to the second of Wapio's episodes on holistic stages after listening to this one. It might just blow your mind. You're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Welcome, Haley. It is great to have you here on the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for wanting to share your story. And you have two kids, but we're going to focus on your second story. Before we do that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Haley McCaunt and I live in South Carolina. I have two kids. I have a little boy named Oliver and I have a daughter named Winter.
Ah, let me guess what season she was born in.
February.
My daughter's from March, so I can appreciate it. That was my favorite winter ever because I wasn't cold.
Yes, it definitely helps.
Right? It's so great. So take us back just briefly. Give us a little bit of what happened with your son's birth so that then we can do a little bit of, you know, that journey that you've been through and how you prepared differently or what you did for your second birth.
All right. So with my son, I got pregnant when I was 17 and I actually had him when I was 18. So I was, you know, the more typical young mom. I didn't really research into anything much. I just kind of went by what my OB recommended. His birth wasn't what I would consider bad or traumatic or anything. It was a typical hospital birth. I wasn't induced. I went into labor naturally the day before my due date, had the epidural and everything. One of the big red flags for me with his birth is that when I got the epidural, you know, they bring all your papers to sign. And I guess in there was a consent for Pitocin. And they started me on Pitocin without even telling me they were going to do it. And when I asked about it, they said that I had signed the papers when I signed for the epidural. But his birth wasn't bad. That was just kind of the, this isn't right moment for me. But he was born and everything was okay. It wasn't too bad. So,
yeah. And it's so interesting that you mentioned that because I rebroadcast Kristen Pescucci's episode on informed consent and refusal.
Yes. It was actually that episode of yours that I listened to when I was preparing for my natural birth with my daughter that made me stop and go, huh, something wasn't right there.
Right, because informed consent is not a form.
Yes, exactly.
And it was a vaginal birth, right?
It was. It was a pretty fast labor to be a first labor. It was from the time I started having contractions until he was out was about 8 hours. So for a first baby, it was pretty quick. It was a textbook delivery is what my OB called it. So it wasn't anything like, of course, it was my baby, so it was special, but it wasn't, you know, anything bright and flashy. It was just a normal hospital birth.
So one of the things that I love to say is that birth can be very boring. And I like boring births, quote unquote, right? Because that means then it's just flowing, it's going, there's nothing, it's just happening. Yeah. Now, so you said you listened to the podcast I did with Kristen Bescucci, and it kind of clued you in like to, huh, something was wrong. Did you feel something was wrong even before listening to the episode?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those, I actually had a family member that I was texting during the time that I was in the hospital, and she had texted me and said, don't let them give you Pitocin unless you absolutely need it. And of course, at that time, they had already started it, but she's a PA, so she's in the medical field. And, you know, from that point is when I really started kind of researching after he was born about Pitocin. And, you know, then you go down a little rabbit hole of hospital births and which hospital births can be great, but with certain providers that don't always do the consent. And some of the research behind out of the hospital births, birth centers, home births, and just kind of, you know, that whole long rabbit hole that you end up going down when you start researching stuff.
Yeah, the research for place of birth is super interesting.
Yes, it is.
Now, I'm still curious about this. So they gave you Pitocin. It was on without your consent. Did it stay on the whole time? Were you able to go, can you turn it off after you realized it was on?
Yeah. No, I was told that as long as they had the epidural in, that I was required to have Pitocin at the same time.
Hmm.
Which, yeah, is not how it works now, but I know that. But which it kind of makes me mad because I was progressing fine. Clearly, I had him in 8 hours. In my opinion, there was no need for the Pitocin.
And the whole idea of just because you have an epidural, you need the Pitocin, those two things aren't evidence-based.
Yes.
What other aha moments did you have, or what did the research give you?
So I'm more of a crunchy mom, I guess you would say. So kind of just talking with some of my friends that are the same like-mindedness. And when I started trying for my daughter, I actually started listening to your show, and a lot of the stuff that I'd heard on there kind of leaned me towards, when I did get pregnant, the midwifery model of care. So I definitely think once I looked into that, realized that that was more for me than the hospital setting.
And let's clarify that, because you can have midwifery model of care at a hospital. So place of setting and care provider create all kinds of different variations and combinations, right? So did you end up going midwifery care at home?
I did a midwifery care at the birth center, and it's interesting that you said that. The midwife actually went through partners with our local hospital, so you can choose to do an in-hospital birth with her or the birth center. So you have both options there. So I know one of my friends was kind of nervous about being out of the hospital for her first baby, so I recommended, because you can still have the midwifery model, but you still have this, I guess, comfort of a hospital for moms that aren't comfortable doing it outside of that setting.
So you switched to midwifery model of care, we're at a birth center. Was there anything else that you did differently?
I definitely tried to take care of myself more this pregnancy. With my first pregnancy, it was, I'll eat whatever I want. I don't have to walk. I'm just going to sit at home and enjoy being pregnant. So with this pregnancy, I definitely tried, took all the vitamins I was supposed to, tried to eat a little healthier, be a lot more active. And I think that definitely helped with my labor and delivery compared to the delivery with my son.
Mm-hmm. So let's fast forward to how labor started. Did you know that things were happening? How did it all start?
So we went out for my mom's birthday. My mom's birthday is February 24th. And at this point, it was the day before my due date, and I was getting a little antsy, to say it lightly. So I went to bed grumpy. I was like, I'm going to go over. I know it, which is not the end of the world, but it's not exactly what you want to do. So I woke up about 2 o'clock and just kind of adjusted in bed. And when I did, I felt like a little warm gush. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I just had some discharge. Well, I stood up because I had to go to the restroom, as you always do when you're almost 40 weeks pregnant. And then it was a really big gush. So at that point, I was kind of like, okay, I think that was my water. So I walked out to my husband, who had fell asleep on the couch watching TV. I was like, I'm pretty sure my water just broke. And he woke up. He said, oh, okay, so I don't have to go to work then, right? So that's pretty much how that one went. We called his parents because they were going to come watch our 2-year-old. And they got there and they're like, okay, great. So are you going to head to the birth center now? What's up? And I was like, I should probably call my midwife. For some reason, that was an afterthought. But I called my midwife, and she basically told me to go back to bed, that if I wasn't having contractions and the fact that I was laughing on the phone meant that I just needed to go back to bed, that I wasn't far enough into labor. One thing that kind of added a little bit of difficulty is that I was GBS positive. So they wanted me to get the antibiotics after so long. So it was about 2:30 when I called her, and she told me she wanted me in the office at 10 a.m. if things hadn't picked up, to get that first round of antibiotics. My adrenaline was pumping and I just could not go back to sleep. So we ended up going to Waffle House to have some breakfast. And then we finished at Waffle House, and it was my husband and my mom with me at this point. And we went to the mall and started walking because I figured, you know, maybe walking, we'd get something stirred up. We walked until it was time to go back to the midwifery office. When I got there, they were like, so has anything picked up? Have you started having contractions? And it was a definite no. So they wanted to check me just to make sure that my water had broken before they started the antibiotics. So she swabbed me. She couldn't quite get it with the first one, so they had to put the speculum in to get farther back. Swabbed it. Of course, it tested positive, and I asked her to go ahead and check me while she was in there just to see because I was curious. I was at a one, which was kind of, to hear that was kind of disappointing. Like, my water's broken, nothing's happening, and I'm at a one. So they told me at that point, sent me over to get the IV started with the first round of antibiotics. It was, I think it was around 10:30 by the time they actually got it started and all.
Where did they do it? You said they sent me over. Was it still at her office or did you go to the birth center or hospital?
It was, the birth center and office was together, but she sent me from an exam room to, I guess it was just like a little IV room where they do all the blood draws and IVs and stuff. So I just sat in there until they finally got all of that pushed out.
See, and that's very different from what we do here. And that's why it's important to know the nuances of the different practices in your area. Because if you went in for GBS, if your water broke and you went in, I don't know that there's an office around us that would just do it in the office, give you the antibiotics and send you home. Usually it's you come into the hospital and then now you're there for the duration.
Yeah. Once we finished the antibiotics, they gave me the natural induction techniques, which we'll discuss more in a minute. But they basically told me, go do stuff and we'll see you again in 4 hours. So they kicked me out. They're like, bye, we'll see you later, which I was thankful for because I didn't really want to sit there all day. Especially when nothing was happening.
No, and I love that. I wish that they would do more of that over here just because if nothing's happening, sitting in the hospital or sitting, we don't have a birth center, so sitting in the hospital is just, you're being watched.
Yeah.
Or you're walking around or it's just annoying. But I think they don't trust that you'll come back in 4 hours is the problem.
Yeah. But so when they sent me on my way, they gave me this little card with some natural induction techniques on it. Have you ever heard of midwife's brew?
So tell me about it.
So it is a combination of, I'm trying to think exactly what was in it off the top of my head. I should have had it written down. It was the Welch's like sparkling grape juice, castor oil, almond butter, the nectar stuff that you get in the little Hispanic owl, the papaya, I think, was the specific flavor. And yeah, I think that was all that was in it.
Okay, we're going to have to like, I'm going to come back to you later to get the actually what was in there and so I can put it in the show notes. Because you said grape juice, nectar, the papaya nectar, almond butter, and then the castor oil.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a really weird mixture.
Very interesting smoothie.
Yes, it wasn't the best ever.
Yeah, so you did it.
I did. We got all the stuff, and I went back to my sister-in-law's house because she was closest to the birth center. I didn't really feel, because I was an hour from the birth center, I didn't feel like driving all the way home. So I just hung out with her, and she'd had a baby 2 weeks before, so I got to play with her baby, and my son was there also. So I drank it at about, it was probably about 12 when we finally got home, and I got it situated and finished. And was just hanging out. And then 1 o'clock hit and it went from 0 to 10 within a matter of minutes.
Do you remember how much castor oil was in the dose that you took?
It was a very, very small amount. It wasn't even enough to make me go to the restroom. I didn't use the restroom from that point until a week after I had my daughter.
Well, that's a whole different conversation.
Yes. That wasn't exactly healthy either. But yeah, it was a very, very small. I have a picture of the actual recipe on my phone somewhere. I can send to you after.
I absolutely want to see your card.
Yes, I will look for it when we are done here. But once I took it, like I said, about 1 o'clock, contractions finally started. And I was super excited. So I was supposed to be back at the birth center at 2 for the every 4 hours of antibiotics. So me and my husband and mom headed back to the birth center to get the next round of antibiotics. Told them contractions were finally starting. And they're like, okay, great. I think at this point they were 4 minutes apart, lasting for about 45 seconds, which is decent. I mean, it's progress.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You must have been so excited.
Yeah, it was. And they were at the point where, compared to my end labor contractions, they weren't that intense. And I guess my midwife knew that because I asked if they were going to check me or send me down. She said, no, you're still smiling. You're happy. You're joking. You're not ready to be here yet. So I was like, oh, okay. So I did my next round of antibiotics. And at this point, I was getting a little hungry again. So there's a Chick-fil-A directly across the street from the birth center. So we ended up leaving the birth center. It was a little later because I had to wait in the waiting room to get the antibiotics. We left the birth center at about 3:15 and was eating my nuggets when transition hit. And it hit hard and it hit fast. I'm sure all the lovely Chick-fil-A patrons were like, is this lady seriously going to push out a baby while she's trying to eat her nuggets? Yes, I was going to finish my nuggets before we called my midwife. So it was about 4 o'clock when we called her again. And I had to have my husband call her because I was at the point where I couldn't speak on the phone. And my contractions were a minute apart, lasting for about a minute. So they were pretty close together and pretty intense at this point.
Totally on top of each other.
Yes, I was getting maybe 10 seconds between contractions.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that was fun. But she was like, okay, so maybe it's time to come back and we'll check you and see about where you are.
You were no longer smiling and chatty.
I was not. I was kind of irritated at that point. But we headed back, thankfully, since it was just across the street, we headed back to the birth center, which I was up in the midwifery care waiting room. And we were up there until about 4:30. Like I said, they were busy. The midwife said they had a lot of last-minute emergency appointments. So I was laboring in the midwifery waiting room for about 30 minutes in transition. I'm sure I kind of scarred some of the other ladies sitting in there. But when I finally got back there, she was like, okay, let's just see where you're at. And I was like, please, please let me be more than a two. So she checked me and she was like, okay, you're at an eight, so we need to send you downstairs now. So at that point, I guess I probably got another burst of adrenaline and I got super excited and it didn't seem that bad at that point.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity undersink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting with just one set of filters from their classic purifier, making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've taken gorgeous photos of your baby or your kids, and then when you want to share them, it is a pain either trying to find the photos or figuring out the group text that they should go to, and then also remembering that, say, Aunt Helen only does email, so you need to send her image separately, Or like in my case, where my husband is a photographer who takes magnificent photos that I rarely actually get to see because they live on his phone or end up scattered in text messages that I can't easily find. Enter the Family Album app, which was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with your loved ones. Basically, it's a personal space for your family's memories without third-party ads or unwanted eyes, and with a bunch of fabulous features. It automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and easily see how your child has grown. And you can also order 8 photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. The Family Album app also has unlimited storage. Plus, it's totally free. Yup, no more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by third-party ads. So, to all the parents out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, level up your family photo game for free and securely with the Family Album photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, all in one word, and download the app to start creating your shared photo legacy. And you had gone from, I'm trying to review my notes, when you went in for the antibiotics and they checked you, you were 1 centimeter at 10 a.m.
Yes.
And now it's like 4 p.m. And you weren't even in labor then, really. Like nothing was happening. And now it's 4 p.m. around and you're 8.
Yes. I'm pretty sure I started dilating when contractions started at 1. So I would say probably went from a 1 to an 8 between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm. The birth is not linear.
Like yes. Yeah.
So you went then, they sent you downstairs to the birth center.
They did. And I don't know if this is common. I've never really experienced it before. But my body just kind of, like, the intensity decreased a lot. Like, I was happy again. I was able, the contractions weren't quite as close together. And I could kind of talk through them. I'm not sure if it was just the excitement of she's going to be here soon, or if it's like, my midwife kind of described it as laboring down. So to where I was super intense, having to focus on getting through them. When we got in the room, I was relaxed, you know, joking again. It almost didn't seem like I was in labor.
Hmm. So did you ever hear the episode with Wapio on the holistic stages of birth?
I don't think I did, actually.
So, and this is something that she talks at length in that episode, but it's something that I learned about in my doula training of the rest and be thankful stage. Wapio calls it the quietude. And it's that time between when you're done with transition and fully dilated to 10, but baby has still to rotate and, like your midwife saying, labor down, like get further in the birth canal. And so this is part of the rethinking the pushing stage, that when you get to 10, it's just the door opening, but the uterus, the lower uterine segment, is still holding the baby's head. And if that head hasn't rotated, if the lower uterine segment is holding that head and you start pushing, it won't work. So that quietude, that rest and be thankful phase, is that letting that uterus come on up, clear the head so the head can rotate, come down more into the canal. And I do see it often that contractions spaced out a little bit more and people get more of a break. And it's just, it's a different view, different sensation.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so I'm glad I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy at all.
Because I was kind of like, I was scared at that point. I was like, is my labor stopping? Like, am I going to stop at 8 centimeters? Like, I'm so close at this point. So to hear that, it's actually a little bit of after relief.
Yeah, no. It's totally, and we need to tell people more about this calm in between, that stage, that quietude, that rest and be thankful. Not everybody experiences, but contractions tend to space out. They mm-hmm. feel different. It's, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely, like, at this point, I went in the bathroom when we got all our stuff in. I was doing my makeup. And they had a rebozo hanging from, I think that's what it's called, the big swing that hangs from the ceiling.
And they might have had, the rebozo itself is just like a very traditional Mexican or Central American scarf that's okay. kind of woven. So if they had it in a swing way, it might be something similar. Yeah, something for you to hang from.
Yes, I think it was like the similar idea of a rebozo. But we were just kind of playing around in that. I was waiting on my sister-in-law to actually get there. I think I kind of joked that my body was waiting for her to get there. She's the one that had the baby 2 weeks prior, and she's my best friend. So I really didn't want to have this baby before she got there.
And so, I believe it. I don't doubt it, because I see it's a mind-body connection. I've seen people wait for doctors. I've seen people wait for doctors to leave. I've seen people for moms to get there. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it was about 5:30 when she finally got there. And probably 5 minutes after she walked in the door, things picked back up very hard, very fast again. And my midwife had come in, and she had filled the tub in between waiting for my sister-in-law to get there. And when things started picking back up again, she was like, do you want to go ahead and get in the tub? Because I had planned a water birth. And I told her, I'm a little scared. I don't want to get in it too early. And she kind of made fun of me for it a little bit. She was like, you're probably at a 10. I'm not going to check you, but I don't think it's too early.
Yeah.
I got in the tub. And once I got in the tub, I had maybe 2 contractions. And then I got that very intense urge to push. There's no way to describe it. Just the very, I guess, heavy feeling in your pelvis. I kind of black out on that. Not black out. I don't remember it very well. So I think it was only maybe 4 or 5 pushes, and I was in the water at this point, and then I switched to being on my hands and knees, and maybe 1 contraction later, my daughter was born.
Mm.
And it was amazing. Oh. It was, and it's like the feeling of, oh my gosh, I just did this, and it was amazing, and meeting your baby for the first time, it was, there's no words to describe how incredible it was.
Oh, and you, did the tub help?
Yeah, I think it did a lot. The contraction that she was born, for some reason, I just stood up. So I guess, I don't know if you could technically consider that a water birth, because she came out like in the air. But as soon as she was out, the midwife handed her to me and I sat back down. So I'm not sure why that last minute I stood up so fast, but.
Mm. So one of the things that, like you were saying, you kind of blacked out, and you don't quite, but it's just time gets really, really fluid and fuzzy when you're in labor. And it's because you go into like deeper brain waves, more like when you're sleeping, or, but you're awake, you're conscious, but you're just so internal, especially if you're having that fetal ejection reflex, like you're just in connection with everything happening with you, that I find that when people are able to do that, then they do stuff like this, that you don't know why you did it, but you did it. Like, you don't know why you stood up, but you stood up.
It makes a lot of sense now looking back, because it was, I wasn't focused on what was going on around me, and there weren't distractions in the room. And I think that helped a lot, that I was able to kind of focus on getting the baby out for a minute. Because up to this point, you know, we had been in public for a good majority of my labor and delivery, and I wasn't really able to, I'm trying to think of the words to use here, to, I guess, grasp what was going on with my body. So at that point, I think it was kind of like, it was the actual reality moment, like, this is happening. And it's crazy that it took to the pushing stage for me to realize that.
What time was she born?
She was born, so her time on her certificate says 5:55, but I was looking back at the camera and she was out by 5:53. So somewhere between 5:53 and 5:55. Generally, I just say 5:55.
It's probably easier to remember.
It is.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned you stood up and then delivered her, and the midwife, you know, caught her, put her, you sat down. Baby came back to your chest. Did you guys hang out in the tub for quite a while? Did she start feeding? How did that after birth happen?
So I was really surprised when she was first born. I was used to, you know, with my son, and I had just been there for my niece's birth 2 weeks prior. Usually, from what I had experienced up to that point, they come out very angry and screaming and fighting. My daughter didn't do that. I was actually a little bit worried, because she came out, once we got back down in the water, she just laid on my chest and fell back asleep. So I tried to nurse her. She wasn't having any of it. She just cuddled up to me and fell right asleep. And that was kind of, I did a little bit of research afterwards, and apparently water births, if you can consider her a water birth, babies tend to be a lot calmer when they enter the world.
Mm-hmm. And I will also link in the show notes the episode I have with Barbara Harper about water births. And she did say that that's part of what the research says.
Mm-hmm. So we hung out in the tub for about an hour, just getting to know each other. It was mostly her sleeping and me staring at her saying, oh, how cute. you know, that first infatuation that you have. After about an hour, my husband did some skin-to-skin time. I did have a second-degree tear, which was a lot better. With my son, I had a third-degree tear. And Ooh. My midwife said, yeah, it was rough. My midwife said that she doesn't think I would have tore as bad if I hadn't have tore with my son.
You're, like, giving us so much good information that I can piggyback on. Because scar tissue doesn't stretch as much, so you do tend to not only tear again if you had a tear, but it tends to go on the scar line.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened again. Which his, despite having a third degree tear, postpartum with him wasn't that bad. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be to have a tear. And I think that's because I kept it very clean and babied it a little bit. So she stitched up the tear. While my husband was doing skin to skin at that point, I guess my daughter got a little mad that she was with daddy and not mommy, which is fine with me. So they delivered they had already delivered the placenta at that point, but they were stitching up the tear. And when they finished stitching up the tear, I got situated in the bed, put a robe on, and finally got her latched and nursing. And she nursed through two visitors. So it was probably about an hour and a half straight that baby latched and just kept nursing. The nurse looked at her and she said, this baby nurses like a pro already. So, and I had breastfed my son for almost 2 years. So I guess breastfeeding for that long and having a baby like that, it kind of came pretty natural to us. Thankfully, we didn't have many problems with breastfeeding.
So breastfeeding was smooth and your milk came in and she kept, you know, latching well, no tongue ties, no lip ties, gaining weight, all the good things.
Yes, she did great. With my son, I was working, so I had to pump all the time. With her, I'm staying home, so I haven't had to pump. She actually won't take a bottle. But breastfeeding her has definitely been a lot easier than with my son, thankfully.
Mm. And once you do it, that tends to be, well, because obviously you know more of what you're doing, but When you breastfeed, you create more glandular tissue. So the fact that you've breastfed before allows for better milk production for the next time.
Okay. And I had a little bit of oversupply with my son also.
You mentioned that the placenta was already delivered before they stitch you. So they deliver it in the tub?
They actually had me like kind of get out of the tub for a minute to deliver it. Well, it was actually when... Right as I was handing her to my husband and getting out is when they delivered the placenta. And looking back on it now, that was probably the absolute worst part of labor and delivery. Like, I would rather have the whole labor and delivery process with the baby up until... It wasn't even delivering the placenta as it was getting stitched up. But like I said, with my son, I had the epidural. So I didn't care. I couldn't feel anything. You know, they gave me the numbing shot when they were stitching me up with my daughter, but it only helps to a certain extent.
Yeah, and depending on the tear, it can take a longer time to do a proper repair. So, yeah, I completely empathize with you that is, for me, it was also the worst.
Yeah, and I think it was a combination of getting stitched up and I wanted my baby back immediately. Despite having her for an hour, you know, it's just that mother-baby connection where you won't, the baby that you just grew inside of you for almost 10 months. You want her in your arms all the time.
Yeah. And so with the placenta, you said it was as you were getting out of the tub. I'm trying to paint a picture. Is it more that just when you stood up, gravity took over and it was already ready and kind of came out? Or did they actually have to try to get it out?
Pretty much when I stood up, gravity kind of took over. I kind of held it in between my legs as I hobbled over to the bed because I didn't want it just plopping on the floor. But once I laid down, it kind of came on out by itself.
And so this was about an hour after she had already been born.
Yes, that's why they made me get out. They're like, their placenta needs to come out now. So yeah, they'd already tried to get me out before. And I was like, well, just give me a little bit longer. So I think in general, they kind of were a little uncomfortable with how long it had went, with the placenta not being fully out yet.
Yeah. And this is something I want to make this distinction, because this is something that I see more at home births, where there is no rush to get repair done, to get the placenta born, to do all these things. Like, I find in the hospital, it's very much within those next 15 minutes, like as soon as possible, they want to see all the things done.
Yes.
And that sort of laid back, I really appreciate that laid backness of a birth center or a home birth. Not that I'm saying, I am not recommending anything for anybody. I'm just pointing out differences. You make the choices that are right for you. Just adding that in there.
Yes.
But there is that laid backness to it, that unless there's a hemorrhage, unless there's something really happening, I have seen and heard this from other people, and you are confirming it, of, you know, it can take up to an hour and it's okay to take up that time. And biologically, it's not that there's an urgency for it to be done so quickly, unless there's something up, right?
Yes, definitely. And it's not like they just left us there by ourselves. They were doing both of our vitals every 15 minutes, definitely keeping a check on my color to make sure I wasn't paling out or anything. So they were making sure that I was okay by letting me wait that long.
Mm-hmm. And I'll link on the show notes an episode that I have with Maren Green from Indie Birth on postpartum hemorrhaging, which was super interesting. And she has this whole, she switched my thinking about placenta delivery and taking it one step further of, why does somebody need to deliver your placenta? Why can't you deliver your own placenta? You know, of continuing on that, if this is a physiological process, how much does it really need to be managed? And I never considered. I was like, yeah, why can't you deliver your own placenta?
Yeah.
So now that you've had both experiences, how are you feeling about all of it?
It was definitely night and day from having my son to having my daughter. Just even the difference in how labor started, how quick they were, and of course the births themselves, they're extremely different. And I think I learned a lot from both of them. My son's birth kind of, you know, set me on this little research binge. And it wasn't just birth that I researched during that time. You know, it was breastfeeding, circumcision, like all of the hot mom topics that you end up researching. And my daughter's, I want to say my daughter's was more spiritual. So with my son, I feel like his was setting me on a path to be the best mom that I can be and to teach me like the first lessons of motherhood. Where my daughter's birth was, it was more of a confirmation of myself that I'm enough. And I don't need, you know, it's great to have all the information, but that my instincts can handle and my body and myself as a whole can handle motherhood without having to rely on other people for it, if that makes sense.
Well, that does totally make sense. It's such a wonderful transformation that you've experienced and gone through. And I really appreciate how you're saying your son put you in the research track and of sort of trying to figure out how to be the mom that you want it to be. And then your daughter bringing you, sort of confirming, is like, yeah, this is, you got it. You got it now. You're good.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, having the first very medicalized traditional hospital birth, which there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want. But having that kind of led me into realizing what I wanted. Because, you know, when you tell people that you want a natural water birth, everybody, well, a lot of people tend to give you that kind of weird, like, okay, kind of look. You know, I think a lot of having my children a lot younger than a lot of people, you do get a lot of comments, and I'm sure every mother does it, but a lot of different comments. Like when I was breastfeeding my son, there was a ton of people that were like, you're so young, there's no reason to do that, just give him formula. And I think it was the same thing with the natural birth. Everybody was like, you know, there's no reason not to get the epidural, just get it, you'll be thankful for it. And I think overcoming both of those, despite what a lot of people around me were saying, it was very healing in a way, and it really boosted my self-confidence for both and helped me, I guess, realize that I'm doing the best that I can and that my best is good enough.
Mm. I am so happy for you that you've had this whole that transformation that you've had. And was there anything that we haven't gotten to that you want to make sure we mention?
One thing that did help me when labor did get a little more intense is I created a little Pinterest board and I saved birth affirmations on there. And it sounds super cheesy, and it is, but it's helpful. So one of my favorite birth affirmations that I just kind of kept repeating to myself when things were getting a little more intense was, women all over the world are birthing with me. So there's so many people that are going through the same thing that I am, and babies being born at the same time. And it was really, I guess it just kind of gave you, like I was saying, the more spiritual aspect of it.
Yeah, and they're doing it in hundreds of different ways. Everyone is specifically unique and for what they need at that time.
Yes.
Mm, yeah, I love that. And yes, affirmations can be cheesy, but they work. They work.
They do. Yeah, at the time I was saving them, I was like, I'm never going to look at these. I don't know why I'm doing it. And then it ended up being my go-to during labor.
I love it. Oh, thank you so very much for sharing your stories with us today. I really, truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I listened to the podcast all the time while I was pregnant. I had a driving job, so I would sit there and listen to like 5 episodes at a time. And I honestly can say that it was probably one of the most helpful resources that I had to prepare me for labor and delivery.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad it was so helpful.
Thank you.
That was mother of 2 children and many horses, Haley McCone. Haley is also the owner of Olive and Grace Photography, where she captures stunning portraits and wedding photos. Learn more at oagphoto.com or take a look at Olive and Grace Photography on Facebook. You can connect with us on Instagram at Birthful Podcast. And in fact, if you're not driving, we always love it when you take a screenshot of this episode right now and then post it to your stories, sharing your biggest takeaway from the episode. Let me know if indeed the similarities blew your mind. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my birth and postpartum preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Also, if like Haley, you find this podcast to be one of the most helpful resources in helping you to prepare for labor and delivery, then I highly suggest you join me for one of my birth preparation courses where we really go deep into the physiology and how you can own your birth. So yeah, come join me. Or you can also support us by trying out some of the wonderful products made by our sponsors. Truly, your support is what allows us to continue doing this work. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plati. Thank you so much for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on GoodPod, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere you listen. And then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.